This is the son of PCJ. Media Network Plus, produced and presented by Paulette McQuarrie and Keith Perrell.
Well, hello, friends, and welcome to the July 28th edition of the monthly version of Media Network Plus from PCJ Radio. It's very nice to have you with us. Well, at the moment, we're currently taking a little bit of a vacation, so we're doing something a little bit different today. My special guest is going to be a friend of mine of more than 20 years. We started off in radio at a small radio station in Montreal with a program called Shortwaves. Then we're going to be going into the archives to hear an interview recorded on November 29th, 1987 with Alan Familian, the then director of programming at Radio Canada International. We have this and much more, so stay tuned. This is Media Network Plus, rewinding the, I would say tape, but this is not tape, so how do we say, open the data files and putting them backwards? That makes no sense. More than 20 years ago, I got my start in radio with a program called Shortwaves that aired on a local station in Montreal.
Good afternoon and welcome to Shortwaves, your weekly review of what's going on the world of international communications. I'm Keith Perron. On the program today, we're going to take a look at the situation in the Gulf with the BBC World Service program Newsreel. And then finally, we'll give you some frequencies and some broadcasters to tune into to find out what's going on with Bill Westenhaven, host, one of the hosts of the International Radio Report, which airs Thursdays here on CKUT.
Wow, that's kind of frightening when I listen to how I sounded back then. The voice also sounds a lot higher. Anyway, the program was originally hosted and created by Boris Shidov. Now, in 1988, I was a listener of the program, and then I don't know how it happened, but we met. And eventually, he asked me to come in and join the team. The show was originally 1 hour, and then it became 30 minutes. Now, it was very different from this program, because even though we talked about international broadcasting, it was more a panorama of what you could hear on the international shortwave bands. So, for example, 1 week, maybe we would have the news from Radio Moscow, followed by a commentary from Czech radio. And then maybe the week later, the BBC doing sports and Radio Peking. That's the way the program was. It was a lot of fun. But back in 1987, when the show began on November 29th, the first show that they did was on Radio Canada International. Boris, who hosted the program and created it, headed down to RCI to interview the then head of programming at RCI, Alan Familian. We bring this interview now as a sound document, because as you know, Radio Canada International signed off on shortwave last month on the 24th. All programming has stopped. So it's interesting to listen to the perspective that they had in 1987. Now, I should warn you in advance that there are a few points in the interview where it does drop. That is because it was recorded directly off air.
Hello and welcome to Shortwaves, your weekly program covering international broadcasting on CKUT 90.3. Today I'm visiting Radio Canada International Headquarters in Montreal. I'm joined by Mr. Alan Familian, Director of Operations and Programming at RCI Radio Canada International. Hello and welcome.
Thank you, and welcome to the new world of broadcasting in Montreal. Looking forward to the station opening.
Exactly. I was wanting to ask you the first question. What is Radio Canada International?
Well, Radio Canada International is the shortwave service of the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation. It is the shortwave service of Canada. When I say Canada, it's because we are the national broadcaster of Canada, the CBC. We don't broadcast as other countries do on a propaganda basis, and that is why we're part of the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation.
Exactly. What is the mandate of Radio Canada International? Because I've read in press releases that you, as you say, you are completely independent editorially from any government whatsoever.
The mandate is rather simple. It's to reflect Canada abroad to an international audience. Canada in all its aspects, economic, political, cultural, etc. And when we say reflect, we mean both reflect the positive and the negative.
Okay, right. As you know, Radio Canada International is broadcast on shortwave around the world. Now, shortwave broadcasting is a form of broadcasting whereby you have use of the ionosphere and the signal is bounced back from the ionosphere back to the listener, and therefore you're able to listen to a broadcast from a fair distance from where it originates. And I was just going to ask you also, how are you broadcasted? I know that you have various relays throughout the world, and what kind of people do you reach?
Well, our main transmitters are located in Sackville, New Brunswick, where we do most of our broadcasts from, but we also have relay arrangements with BBC and Deutsche Welle, among others, and those programs are then relayed either via satellite from Britain or from Deutsche Welle transmitters.
Yes, and you have certain programmings, you broadcast in various languages. How many languages exactly is it?
We broadcast in 11, soon to be 12, and I'll get into that in a few minutes. Our main target area is Central and Eastern Europe, where we broadcast in 6 languages, 8 if you count our 2 official English and French. But they are Russian, Ukrainian, Polish, Czech, Slovak, Hungarian, and German. And of course, English and French. We broadcast to Latin America in Spanish and Portuguese for Brazil. And we broadcast to Western Europe, Caribbean, and the United States in English and French. In the Caribbean, we also broadcast in Spanish.
I think I'd just like to point out also to many of our listeners that are just tuning in for the first time and are not really aware of what shortwave is. Actual statistics of the number of people that are listening are quite staggering. There are some 500 stations that broadcast throughout the world using 1,500 transmitters. And you have just recently done a survey of your total audience. And how many people do you have listening out there?
We've done a survey in which the most recent figures we use are up to 85. And we estimate conservatively, and I must say conservatively, our audience at 16.25 million around the world.
Which is quite amazing.
Of which 3/4 are located in Central and Eastern Europe, which is normal since most of our programming is directed to that area.
Yes. As far as budget goes for the Radio Canada International, what is your total budget? How is it going? I hear that there are some cutbacks.
Well, our budget is approximately, in round figures, $14 million a year, which comes from the appropriation of the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation. So we are in the small to medium-sized broadcaster on a comparative basis with Radio Netherlands, Radio Sweden, Radio Australia. As far as budget cuts are concerned, what you've heard is been around for a long time, and I think that stems from a general lack of knowledge in Canada about shortwave. RCI is known everywhere else in the world, but very little known in Canada itself.
Yes, I also wanted to point out a few years ago when I was studying in Eastern Europe, I used to listen to RCI broadcasts every morning because, you know, shortwave is one of the means of listening to a very balanced point of view as regards to news and other programs. And I'd just like to point out, I do believe that for a vast majority of people living behind the Eastern Bloc, radio broadcasting and picking up services on shortwave is very, very important. How many employees do you have?
We have a total of about 200, which 150 are involved in programming.
And your variety of programs include?
The programs are basically built, as you know, shortwave is not a great medium for music, so our programs are mainly information-centered. They're half-hour long. You could subdivide it basically into 3 categories. It begins with 10 to 12 minutes of news, followed by a press review or a commentary on the day's news, followed by what we call spectrum, which is another 12 to 15 minutes of the general softer items of the day, covering the gamut from cultural to economic within Canada.
To Eastern Europe, you broadcast in Czech, Ukrainian, and in Russian. Are any of your broadcasts to Eastern Europe jammed?
No, they haven't been jammed for many, many years. And if I could expand on that, the usual question is, why aren't you jammed when the others are? Are you so harmless? And we have done a lot of study on that, and it's not the reason. The reason we understand is that jamming costs approximately twice as much as broadcasting. And the Soviet Union, until recently, used to concentrate their jamming on the large stations, which is why we were allowed in unjammed. Of course, now most of the jamming has stopped, except for RFERL.
Yeah, because I was reading recently a publication that is published by Voice of America on jamming, and apparently the Soviets are spending in the region of about $1.2 billion per year on jamming. As you said, jamming is very, very expensive.
That's right.
We've read in the McGill Tribune, one of the publications at McGill University, that you're expanding, or you're going to be creating English courses for audiences in China. And well, I was just wondering if you could, you know, just tell us a little bit about that.
Well, as you know, as you stated in the opening, our policies are totally independent of government. We do have a link with the Department of External Affairs, and I should explain that very clearly. The only link we have is that we consult with them on languages and target areas. And they advise us on where they think we should be broadcasting in the near future. Now, that advice comes, unfortunately, without money. One of the areas that they suggest as a high priority is Asia and the Pacific. We, with our antenna in Sackville, have not been able to reach Asia and the Pacific. One way of reaching China is, as a matter of fact, with McGill University, a joint project whereby we'll be teaching English in China, broadcast on domestic radio stations in Shanghai, Guangzhou, and Beijing. That was one way of getting the Canadian message into China. However, beginning April 4th, and this is the big news, we will begin an Asian service on a daily basis using Radio Japan's transmitters at Yamata. They have been using our transmitters in Sackville 4 hours a day, and we're going to have an exchange of time with them on a four-hour-a-day basis. We'll be broadcasting in English, French, Japanese, Russian, and Ukrainian to Soviet Asia.
Yes, it's very interesting. Incidentally, Radio Japan can be picked up fairly clearly on the 49-meter band. You also are beamed out to Europe via the Daventry transmitter in England, and that has been in existence for how many years? How many years have you had that arrangement?
I can't tell you the exact number of years, but there's a long tradition of cooperation between the BBC and the CBC and the RCI and the BBC, and that has been going on for a great number of years.
Oh, that's very interesting. So your expansion plans then include the Asian relay, and you'll be hitting a lot of people in Hong Kong. Is there anything else, and are there any other trends that you'd like to talk about? A lot of people have suggested that the trend now in Canada and in North America, for instance, is that people are listening and discovering shortwave. What do you feel? Do you have any predictions on that?
Well, that's a controversial question. Many people feel that shortwave is not the ideal medium to reach people in the United States because they don't have the habit of shortwave. But recent studies I've read show that there may be, within the next 15 to 20 years, a 4- to 5-fold expansion of shortwave, I suppose, based on the size and the small size of shortwave receivers and the lower price.
Yes, exactly, because a lot of sets now, maybe some of the listeners out there have radio sets, transistor radios that are very small, computerized. You can buy, for instance, the ICF 2010, which is programmable, and picks up everything perfectly for around $500. There are even sets that cost less than that. And as you were saying, I think now with the advent of more technology and transistorized radios, you're able to pick up shortwave very easily. I was just wondering, are there any other things that Radio Canada intends to do?
Well, Radio Canada International, as you know, our main objective is still to reach Asia on a daily basis. We would love to start a Chinese service, but that is a problem because we don't have even the beginnings of such a service. So again, it comes down to the old bugaboo of funds.
Funds and budget cuts,
if and when
yes.
we do get funds, high on the priority is a Chinese service directed to mainland China.
You have, I read somewhere that you have in the region of 20,000, 30,000 letters that you receive each year?
We receive more than that. We receive close to 50,000 letters a year, and that's without any encouragement because we don't have a great staff to handle letters. And that, again, is a disproportionate amount of letters considering our small size, just as our audience is disproportionate compared to our size.
So as you were saying before, the vast majority of your listeners are in Eastern Europe. Broadcasts in what time do they begin broadcasts to the Soviet Union in Ukrainian or in Russian?
They begin early in the morning here, which with a time delay would be early evening in Moscow. All our transmissions are based on ideal times in the target area.
Exactly.
In Russian, we have four broadcasts a day. I think two in the morning and two in the evening.
So obviously hockey news and things like that that you cover must be of great interest to your listeners out there.
Absolutely,
yes.
Hockey news, anything Canadian, Soviet.
Is any sport actually broadcast live on Radio Canada?
No, unfortunately not. We carry sports results, sports scores as part of our news package, but you know, with a half-hour block, you can't devote 3 or 4 hours of airtime to a sports event.
Okay, well, that was very interesting. Thank you very much, Mr. Alain Familien, Programming Director and Director of Operations at Radio Canada International. And we look forward to talking to you again. If you can keep us in touch with what's happening at RCI, we're always very, very interested.
Certainly will. Thank you, and good launching on your radio station.
Thank you very much.
My good friend Boris Shidov interviewing Alain Familien, the then one-time programmer of Radio Canada International. You're listening to a special edition of Media Network Plus, a holiday edition, sort of laid back and more personal than what we normally do.
Call the PCJ answer line at country code 44-20-3286-1399. That's country code 44-20-3286-1399 and leave your comments and questions. On shortwave, satellite, and the internet, this is PCJ Radio.
I also want to mention that if you call up the PCJ answer line, some of the messages will be used on this program. Now, before we took a listen to that, we heard my good buddy Boris Shidov interviewing Alain Familien, the then program director of Radio Canada International. That was recorded on November 29th, 1987. Eventually, like I mentioned earlier, I ended up hosting and producing that program, Shortwaves. Now, Boris and I hadn't seen each other in many, many years. And when he found out that I was heading to the United States to the city of Plymouth Meeting in Pennsylvania for the SWL Winterfest, the 25th anniversary, he took the opportunity to come down from Montreal and we hung out for 3 days. It was a lot of fun because he brought some recordings of shows that I did many, many, many years ago, so many years I wish I could forget, that I hadn't heard in all that time. Anyway, we decided to sit down and record a chat that we can use today on the program. It was a lot of fun, and I hope you enjoy listening to it as much as we had recording it. Now, to give you a little idea of what Boris was like on air, because we only heard the interview, let's take a listen to a clip of a special edition of Shortwaves that we did. Actually, it was 4 shows, where we feature the music from the John Peel show. But not just any music. Music that was recorded especially for John Peel on the BBC World Service. For this special program, we invited along to the studio Brent Bambury, who at the time was hosting Brave New Waves on CBC Stereo. He is now working for the CBC Radio Network, hosting another program. So let's take a little listen to that first.
This is Radio Moscow, Moscow. This is Radio Moscow, and here is the news.
Vous écoutez bien sûr Radio France Internationale.
BBC.
Vous écoutez bien sûr Radio France Internationale.
BBC.
Moscow.
Czechoslovak Radio.
Czechoslovak Radio Prague.
Welcome to Shortwaves on CKUT Radio McGill, your show that brings you a taste of international broadcasting from the shortwave bands. Today we begin with the first in a series of four programmes on John Peel, the legendary British DJ, and the popular Peel Sessions studio recordings at the BBC of some of pop's most influential groups. As many listeners are already aware, John Peel can be heard worldwide on the BBC World Service. In Montreal, you can listen to John Peel on the usual BBC frequencies in the 49-metre band at 11:30 p.m. Monday evenings. In winter, the show begins at 10:30 p.m. At the age of 49, John Peel plays tracks from newly released albums and singles from the contemporary music scene. He's been doing this for about 21 years now. His show on Radio 1 in England, the national pop station, attracts some 200,000 regular listeners per show, and many new and upcoming groups see this exposure as invaluable. So we thought we'd do something a bit different today and look in depth at one of the most loved shows broadcast on the shortwave bands, the John Peel Show. Joining us in the studio today, a person who is quite familiar with John Peel and the John Peel Studio Sessions, is Brent Bambury of Brave New Waves on CBC FM.
Hi, Boris.
Hi, how are you doing?
Fine, thanks for inviting me.
I'd like to ask you, Brent, what do you think of the John Peel Studio Sessions, and what do they mean to Brave New Waves?
Well, the Peel Sessions for us were an inspiring point, because we now record sessions of our own in our own 24-track studio at CBC. And the Peel Sessions, especially when they began to be released on disc, told us that there could be a market for these kind of things, that they could be commercially successful, and that they could also be an invaluable help to young bands. Now, the thing is, between releasing records and actually doing them on radio, is that when you do it on radio, you're introducing, almost as soon as it's happening, a live audience to new music by young bands. And of course, some of the records that Strange Fruit have been releasing date back as far as 1970.
Exactly.
So these are documents of Peel's very long and distinguished career and his service to independent music. And that, I think, is a tribute not only to Peel, but to some of the people that he's worked with. And
more than 20 years ago,
exactly,
on a station in Montreal, we did a show called Shortwaves. It wasn't about international broadcasting. It was taking stuff off shortwave and really illustrating to people the kind of thing that you can hear from the BBC World Service, programs like John Peel, the Tony Myatt Request show, BBC Newsreel, which is no longer on, to commentaries from Radio Moscow, And all kinds of other
Radio
wacky things, Radio Netherlands. Now, I remember going to your house, and there was something that you had in your house that, if your back was turned, I would have walked away with it. It was a beautiful Cambridge radio.
Which I still have. It was a Cambridge radio originally from the UK that we brought over from the UK, made by Pye from 1958. And if a lot of the people in your audience do remember, a lot of the radios that were in existence in those times worked on valves.
And for our American audience,
yeah,
that's tubes. Radio tubes, yeah.
Yeah. Radio tubes that were the predecessor of the transistors that you see in modern radios now. And actually, that radio is still working fantastically well, and you can still pick up shortwave stations.
And just a question, does it have the green magic eye?
It has the famous green magic eye that comes together. There are two parts of it. It's difficult to describe to the audience listening, but I would say it's something like from James Bond 007, something akin to a radar. But what you see on TV when a ship is going in, you know, in difficult waters, there's the radar screen. What happens is when you have tuned the station perfectly, mm-hmm. The two
comes
parts
together.
Of that radio come together. So yes, it does have the famous green eye. One of the things it also has is also the famous plate. It's a plate that was a feature in the radio that would give you the positions of all the stations in Europe. So, for instance, if you wanted to listen to Radio Luxembourg in those days, or Radio Caroline, or Moscow, you would actually tune the, I would say, the side bar, I think that's the closest term, that would move up and down, and then it would fix in. So, for instance, if you're looking for London or Paris, mm-hmm. you would move that dial to Paris until you saw this sidebar touch Paris. That means you were tuned in, but
yeah, but you know, I've noticed and I've heard this from a lot of people. Bob Zanotti, who's a contributor here, worked at Swiss Radio International. He said that sidebar for him never worked. He said he'd go to Moscow. I think it was just for decoration more than anything,
It was just for decoration. In the UK in those days, in the early 70s, you had BBC Radio 1, 2, 3, and 4, and they did have fixed frequencies on the medium wave band.
Yeah, but international broadcasters change frequencies.
That's right. So they were the only ones that were accurate. Everything else was not accurate. And as the Cold War progressed, all those frequencies changed radically, so it was not accurate. But that radio has a 12-inch wide speaker, so the sound coming from that is just immaculate.
Well, that's one thing, actually, about the old radios that I like, is the sound from
them.
Right. But the thing that I don't like about them is, today, with the modern digital radios, the radios you can just punch in the frequency, it locks into the frequency. Right. You don't get the drifting or anything like that. And you know, today there's so much static out there.
Exactly.
Not too long ago, a friend of mine, he has a Telefunken, a very old Telefunken. It still works. And I was noticing that after a few minutes, it would slightly drift off frequency, something, of course, that the new radios have resolved.
They've resolved, yeah. That radio does, you know, obviously it will go off frequency. You hear the distortion that is very, you know, prevalent. That's part of the beauty of shortwave listening, is all the distortion and the noises and number stations that you hear in shortwave. I mean, that's all the thrill of listening to shortwave. With the digital tuners, I think that, you know, obviously you have some drifting, but it's more accurate. And it's more of a computer nowadays. Just imagine that radio has a solid wood box. I think it's made of oak, and the sound coming from there is just really something else.
You were born in England.
Yes.
You spent a lot. Of course, you emigrated to Canada when your parents immigrated to Canada. Your father is Russian. Your mother is Italian.
That's right. And I'm Transylvanian.
And you're Transylvanian. But let me ask you: for listening to international radio, was this the reason why? Because when your dad moved to Canada, it was a way for him, let's say, to listen. Even though Radio Moscow was putting out garbage, was it just a way so that he could just hear the garbage they were putting out?
Well, that was we're looking at the early 80s and. That was a time when shortwave and international broadcasting was at its peak. And it also, if some of our younger listeners might not realize it, but that was pre-digital and pre-internet days. So there was no way of getting information outside of the country. The only way of getting that information was over shortwave. And so if you wanted to listen to the BBC, you wanted to listen to Radio Moscow in North America, or listen to Radio Moscow in Russian, that was the way to go.
Something I think that the younger generation today, who, let's say, don't know what shortwave is, had never heard of Radio Moscow. I was having this discussion with someone, and I said, you know, in some ways, these international broadcasters, be it Radio Moscow, Radio Canada International, Radio Australia, it doesn't matter who, they all had mailbag programs where people would write in. Letters and comments were used on air. In some ways, if you think about it, it's almost like a very primitive version of social media.
Exactly, exactly. It was a very primitive way of social media and communicating in those days. And you had different situations. I think there was even a program on the BBC World Service, I forget the name, where they would answer listeners' questions. And they would receive letters from all over the world. I think I must have written in once or twice. Radio Moscow had the famous, I think it was called Moscow Mailbag.
With Joe Adamov.
Exactly. And those were just such fun shows to listen to with different opinions. And what can I say? I mean, people used to use snail mail and didn't know any better.
Mm-hmm.
Now what we have, you know, in the digital age, obviously everything is instantaneous. And I think the new generation out there, they don't know how blessed they are that they can switch on a PC or a Mac and listen to the BBC World Service or any other station instantly or instantaneously.
But something I think that people don't know how to do anymore And that's sit down with a piece of paper and pen, write a letter,
right.
Write the address on the envelope, and send it. I mean, I actually, myself, I still enjoy doing that every now and again. It is different, you know, and I think that when you write a letter that way, you actually take more care with what you write. When you write on a keyboard,
yes.
You know, it's like with most
yeah.
of the new technologies out there. I mean, look, we take cameras, for example. When you were using film, you know, you just didn't take picture after picture after picture.
Exactly.
You know, you saved a little. So that was sort of, getting back to international broadcasting, that was sort of your introduction into it and everything.
Well, that was my introduction, was to be able to get some news from the UK, from Europe, that was lacking in Canada at that time. Obviously, in 2012, it's a different world. Communication is instantaneous. But I think also the audience must realize, a lot of people probably also remember, what thrill it was to tune a radio dial on the shortwave bands in those days, where there were literally hundreds and hundreds of stations from all over the world, and actually be able to listen to the BBC or Moscow or any other station, sometimes under difficult conditions, at different times of the day when that station was not broadcasting to your region or area, mm-hmm. Was something else. It was a thrill to find that signal, to find and listen to that station.
The station that I remember the most, because I got such a thrill when I heard it for the first time, was Radio RSA, Radio South Africa. And they had that Twitter bird that
they
used to make
that beautiful jingle. I don't know if you have an archive of that. It's in my mind, but obviously we'd have to find that on the internet. Yeah. But that was
the one that I remember. What about yourself? What do you remember the first thing that you heard? Radio Moscow, right?
Well, there would be obviously the Big Ben on the BBC, and also the chimes of the Kremlin bells. Things like that were certainly indistinguishable. If you heard those birds twittering from South Africa, you would know that that was Radio RSA.
Right. Just like, for example, Yankee Doodle Dandy on The Voice of America,
exactly.
The first four notes of O Canada,
exactly.
or the trumpet voluntary that the BBC World Service used to play.
Exactly. And those songs and tunes so define the radio stations. And I think in essence, they are very iconic of that age, of the 80s and the mid-80s, when shortwave was at its boom.
Yeah, because nowadays, very few broadcasts on shortwave have any type of interval signal. Some still do, like North Korea still has one.
Wow.
Radio Japan, if I'm not mistaken. But the BBC
yeah.
don't anymore. Nowadays, they just sign on. The Voice of America still has theirs, but other broadcasters just sign on.
Well, I think that originally the intent of that was for people in those areas to be able to actually sync their watches to the tones that were being broadcast at that time.
And also, when you had radios that didn't have a digital display,
exactly.
You had the slide dial, so at least you knew that if you heard that, you knew the station that was going to come on.
The station was on, and you knew, for instance, that it was 8 o'clock, because the BBC would give you the time in GMT, you know, plus one, minus one, whether it's summer or winter, but you would know that you were listening to that station at a particular hour. I think nowadays with, cell phones and mobile phones and the internet, we've no need anymore to know what time it is. It's present everywhere.
Here at the SWO Fest, there's been a number of very interesting forums that have been taking place. There was one that we went to today, in fact, on Radio Free Asia. That was quite interesting. And there was also one on Wi-Fi radios. And they had even like the first generation of Wi-Fi radio. And I'm looking at that and thinking, when is this thing going to load? You actually have one of those.
I have one of those. Unfortunately, my flight was delayed and I didn't arrive until the afternoon. I missed that conference. But
The one on Wi-Fi radio, you were here.
Okay.
I think it's the beer talking, Boris.
Maybe it's the beer talking. Who knows? Or it's late at night. But anyways, no, I have the first commercially sold Wi-Fi radio, which was the Acoustic Energy radio that I bought in the UK. And in those, I think a couple of years back, I paid £200, 200 sterling. Obviously, the prices now have gone down. And at that time, when I was in the UK, obviously I'd heard of this radio being sold, and I kind of timed my visit to the time that radio was released on the market in the UK. And I said to myself, what a marvel, what a marvelous invention it is to be able to access all those radio stations without the use of a computer. So that was the first radio, as I said, commercially available, that let you listen to any radio station you wanted that was broadcasting or streaming from your bedroom, from your kitchen, and liberated you from sitting down in front of the PC. And I think that's quite revolutionary now. And obviously, that's moved on where people can access those streaming stations now via mobile phones.
But you know, the first Wi-Fi radio I remember even getting my hands on, it was at a conference a long time ago. I have to tell you, I wasn't impressed. It had a menu, and it showed the BBC and other broadcasters, and every time I went to click on it, it was showing, okay, it's 1% ready, 2% ready, 3%, it was slow. Yes.
Keith, you're totally right. Obviously, in Europe and in North America, where internet speeds are fairly stable and fast, these stations will buffer and will load up quicker. That's one of the problems still inherent, but I do have a Logitech Squeezebox Wi-Fi radio, which I bought this year, and that has they've really improved on that. So basically, it can buffer within a second or 2 seconds. Mm-hmm. Some of the older Wi-Fi radios, one of the problems, as you say, was being able to get that station that was listed in their directory. One of the reasons being, at that time, was the fact that either the company would not update the URL, the new URL that that station would be broadcasting on or streaming. But now what's happened is that people that do want to send in new URLs that go with the stations, they're able to log into the website and actually update those that information directly, so it makes for a quicker upswing. But I do know that Receiver, they maintain a database which is fairly decent, and VTuner also maintains a very decent database, and Logitech, if I'm not mistaken, is using the TuneIn radio database, which is very, very frequently updated. One of the problems Wi-Fi radios are having is tuning into stations in North America that will stream using the Flash Player on PC. There are not many systems, not many Wi-Fi radios that can handle that right now. One of the reason being is that the advertisers and the station themselves want you to tune into their website and stream and listen to the station directly on their website.
But the thing is, by doing that, they're probably cutting themselves off because, it was just announced recently that that I think Adobe, that makes Flash, they said they're not going to do any more new versions at all. And, you know, Wi-Fi radios now, there are some on the market that are portable Wi-Fi radios that are the size of an iPhone. And they've become so small, they're inexpensive, and they're very easy to use. Let's now move to programming on radio. There was a time when the personality, and I think this is something that everybody can identify with, any city you went to in the world, it was the personality that was on the air. Today, in many cities around the world, including Montreal where you live, you're seeing automation. Somebody goes in, They put down a few voice tracks. They could be in another city, in another time zone.
Exactly.
And everything is pre-programmed. And it's, I like to call it the McDonald's of radio. It's all pre-packaged, the fast food of radio. Yourself, what do you think of this?
I think you're totally right, Keith, in your observations. I think one of the things are, I mean, you probably have the Howard Sterns that have been around for a long time. People are going to tune in to his radio show. It's not available in Montreal, but if you do subscribe to Sirius Radio, you can listen to the broadcast. And they're tuning in for, you know, his opinions, his personality.
Well, you know, the thing is, we're talking about like the automated radio stations. What I don't get is why would you do that? Because most people these days have some type of MP3 player. So why would you listen to radio for something that you can just put on your MP3 player?
Well, I think what I was going to say is that I don't think people can stay long enough in radio to develop a personality. Simply, it's so competitive in North America that things change radically. One day you're there, the next day you're gone. So the cult of personality, of announcers that have been on the air for 20 years and more, I think that those days are gone. We're not going to see that anymore. That was more, you know, in the earlier days, in the 80s, mid-80s, you would be able to listen to the same person on radio very frequently. Especially on the BBC, they would have a lot of announcers that have been there for many, many years. And people would tune in to, like, for instance, Chris Moyle's show. He's still broadcasting. I don't listen to it. And other, you know, other broadcasters. But I think that, you know, personality radio, I think that's a thing of the past.
Well, you know, Janice Law, who does the International Radio Report, on a local station in Montreal called CKUT, she was making a presentation here of radio, of the places that she's traveled to. Unfortunately, I missed the presentation because I was busy with something else. But I've heard some of the stuff, and I remember thinking, it seems so much more interesting at what's happening in other countries. Overseas, radio is so vibrant. They're experimenting with new things with the stuff that I've heard that she has.
Although there was a comment made, one of the people attending the conference did say that in a lot of countries, especially in Africa, Latin America, they found that a lot of the stations, especially the intros and the extros, they were very Americanized. And not to say that that's good or bad, but just to say that even a lot of those stations abroad are sounding more homogenized these days. But certain stations, for instance, in Sudan and in Latin America that we did hear clips were definitely much more innovative than commercial radio that we hear in Montreal.
Well, Boris, you know, we have to go right now. Let me take that again. Well, Boris, you know, right now I think we have to go because there's a session tonight happening in a few minutes. So anyway, thank you for coming by. We actually had a little bit of snack. Boris is drinking a beer called Yuan Ling, right? A lager.
Yuan Ling Lager, and it's a lager from the Philadelphia area, which is actually very good and very yummy.
But it has a Chinese name.
It certainly does. I don't know why that is, but I'm told it's one of the new craft beers.
Boris, thanks a lot for talking to us today.
Thank you very much, Keith. All the best to you.
And I was speaking there with my good friend, Boris Shidov. Now, let's go into the archives even further. How many of you remember Hallercrafters? Right. Well-respected name in ham receivers and shortwave receivers. Well, in the late 1950s, they released a single, yes, a 45 RPM, to promote shortwave radio. And guess what? We have it for you right now, but not just any copy, because we also have one copy that we're giving away of this rare gem. Stay tuned, and I'll tell you how you can get one later on in the program.
This is the sound of adventure, and I am Alex Dreyer, your man on the go, here to escort you on a most unusual trip around the fabulous, fantastic world of shortwave radio. through the facilities and cooperation of the Hallicrafters Company, world's most respected name in communications, this limited edition recording will bring you a new dimension in history, in current events, in excitement and drama, the likes of which you may never before have experienced. So please turn on your imaginary shortwave set and join me now as we scan the bands for the voices of adventure, new words and new sounds. From outer space to Little America. From aircraft pilot to rock and roll. From a fishing boat captain to genuine Italian opera. Every sound authentically reproduced directly from actual shortwave broadcasts you might have heard in your own living room on a Hallicrafters shortwave receiver. For instance, here is an event that made the front pages of newspapers all over America last year, the dramatic capture of a desperate criminal named Richard Carpenter, who had shot a policeman in Chicago, Illinois. Through a sixth sense, known only to the best of newsmen, a field reporter literally was on the firing line with police during the capture, relaying the entire proceeding with a mobile shortwave transmitter. Listen closely now, and you'll hear the actual gunfire and the excitement that follows.
Those were the shots in front of 2048 Potomac. They have him up there now. The police are all crouched behind the cars. You can hear them firing at him now. Is he on the roof or is he in the building? He's in the third floor of the building. Is it Carpenter? It's Carpenter. Time is 11 minutes after 9.
They've got him.
They've got him. They're bringing him out now. They're taking him out now. Get out of the way, will you? Get out of the way. There's a terrific crowd around him. The police are trying to make a cordon around this man while they lead him away. The street is full of people. The police are walking here. I'm next to an officer with a submachine gun pointed in the air.
Of course, incidents like that don't occur on shortwave every night, thank goodness. On the other hand, you can tune in on the regular police broadcasts, and they make pretty exciting listening. You've heard it said that the only way to learn a foreign language is to live in a foreign country. Well, maybe so. But if someone in your family is a language student, the next best thing is shortwave radio. Twist the dial a few times any night, and a linguistic paradise is yours. In fact, every language spoken by man. Spanish.
Voy a cantar el himno, qué rica bendición.
Magnífico, Loida. Es un himno muy adecuado para cantarlo en este programa.
French.
Ah, mais mon âme surabonde. Nous verrons l'or et l'azur. Les ciels glacés dessinent la vraie lumière.
German.
Rudolf Stockhaus, Ringen, Bartons.
And if you want a new twist on American jazz music, you might tune in your Hallicrafters receiver to something like this.
Der junge Rock'n'Roll-Star, eine eigene Komposition.
Whether time is critical to your business or you're merely fussy about details, shortwave will bring you the National Bureau of Standards WWV exact time report periodically, 24 hours a day.
National Bureau of Standards WWV. When the tone returns, Eastern Standard Time is 8:55 p.m.
Everywhere we turn, we read about this modern air age of ours that thrives on a pace we earthlings can scarcely imagine. But with a Hallicrafters shortwave receiver, it's a simple matter to get in tune, so to speak, with the men who live in the stratosphere, the pilots, and the tower control men who guide them. And here's just a sample.
Miami Air Force 17, that is affirmative. Air Force 12678, over.
Air Force 17, Manor 97 for Air Force 12678, Miami. Roger, thank you.
And here are some voices that were heard literally around the world not long ago when a group of radio amateurs aboard a globe-circling military plane talked to hundreds of amateur stations during Operation Worldwide.
W8OLJR Nautical Mobile. QRZ, this is Operation Worldwide.
Around the world flight on military air transport plane C-54, 50564. Calling CQ, calling CQ, calling CQ.
Yugoslavia calling, why you unable to, simply nice to hook up with you there from that worldwide operation you have. The name here is Mirko, Mike Ida, Roger King Ocean, M-I-R-K-O. Mirko is the name and location is Belgrade, of course.
YU-1AD, W-8OLJ. Okay, fine, Mirko. This is the FPM 200 is a transistorized helicopter transceiver. W-8AW, are you still on there? W-8AW, go ahead.
Back to Earth again. Down on the Gulf Coast, even a landlubber like me gets advance notice when the tuna fleet is coming home, if the wind's in the right direction. Fortunately, the canneries have much more accurate data, thanks to the modern miracle of powerful shortwave radio telephones above the boats. Most every night, you can pick up conversations like this.
Trying to do that. I mean, you could probably get a piece of inch and get it in there, and then you'd have to weld it pretty tight on the end of your drum to hold it to keep it from rattling around in there.
Fortunately for mankind, the sort of language you'll hear next is spoken infrequently, and America will not forget that it was spoken even once. On the 2nd of September 1958, Soviet jet fighters over Armenia shot down in cold blood an unarmed U.S. military transport plane, apparently having lured it over the border with fake radio beams. Its fate might never have been known, except for the alertness of shortwave monitors who actually tape-recorded the voices of Russian flyers taking part in the slaughter. Listen and remember. And if you've tired of Westerns on TV, try the shortwave bands any evening for a different kind of live dramatic fare, direct from Laos or Lucerne or London.
How many times have you seen Morrison and the deceased man talk together?
I did not take notice exactly, but 2 weeks before the crime, he was too much friendly with him. I saw him every night when I came from my work.
You gave evidence at the police court?
Yes.
Did you say this? I had known the prisoner about 2 months. He was friendly with Baron about 2 weeks before he was murdered. I have seen them a couple of times talking together. Is that correct?
In the United States alone, there are more than 185,000 amateur radio stations. They are operated by doctors, scientists, mechanics, even housewives, ordinary folks with a boundless curiosity, a spirit of adventure, and an urge to know and understand and help their fellow man. In times of disaster or emergency, in wartime or peacetime, radio amateurs provide a lifeline of communications where no other can exist. Recently, for example, a man in Evanston, Illinois, answered his telephone one evening and to his utter astonishment found himself talking to his brother at the South Pole. The conversation relayed by local radio amateur Marvin Eichhorst. Listen.
Carl, I was just wondering, I wonder if you could tell me something about the camp life down at the South Pole in... By the way, how's your weather conditions down there, Carl? It's on the mild side here in Chicago. Come in, please.
First, I will start off and say, well, I am about, I'm better than 10,000 miles there from Chicago, down here at Low America. And Low America is located about a mile and a half or 2 miles inland. It's located on Keenan Bay on the Ross Ice Shelf. On the Ross Ice Shelf. And we're on ice here. We're on ice that is about 800 feet thick. And the ocean measures about 2,000 feet deep under that.
And even on the amateur bands, the mind of woman is as wonderful and mysterious as ever.
Stay down there on Sanibel. Over.
We stay at a perfectly wonderful place called the Island Inn, which we love dearly, and I think you would like it also. It's very simple. You wear shorts all day and then maybe wear a cotton dress at night. We get up around 8. We go to bed around 9. Over.
Well, it just sounds divine.
As man's horizons broaden, not merely to other lands but to other worlds, his communications lifeline must broaden too. For without communication, man would be totally lost in this universe. On the 11th of November, 1935, a United States Army balloon established a world altitude record of 73,395 feet into the stratosphere. Its name, Explorer 2. Shortwave receivers for the home were virtually unknown then. Otherwise, you could have heard this amazing three-way shortwave conversation between the late Captain Edwin C. Music, world-famous airline pilot, Captain A.W. Stevens above the balloon, and a newspaper reporter in London, England.
Can you hear me all right?
Oh, yes, certainly.
How's everything going?
Everything's going down now. The altitude that we have at the present time is less than 30,000 feet now.
Hello, Captain Stevens.
Hello.
This is the Daily Telegraph, London.
This is Explorer 2.
Congratulations to you and Captain Anderson on your great achievement.
Thank you very much, sir. We're descending now a little too fast, and we're putting our ballast.
Oh, dear.
So I'll have to sign off, I believe, and get back to our duties. Thank you very much.
Hello, Captain Stevens.
Yes?
Just one more word. What about that rip in your balloon?
What about it?
Yes, what happened?
Well, we fixed it. There was a rent about 17 feet long.
Was it really?
Now, listen, you'll have to excuse me because we got to get busy.
I hardly need add that man's progress in the quarter century since that historic event has been fantastic. The name of that gas-filled spaceship and the statistics are remarkably significant today. For in December of 1958, a new American Explorer, Explorer 4, was launched. And from a height of not 14, but nearly 1,000 miles, you could have heard on a shortwave receiver the most dramatic message of hope and faith in modern history. The voice of the President of the United States, President Eisenhower. From outer space to Timbuktu, from pilot to sea captain, from overseas news to music in Rio de Janeiro, the great events of history and excitement of the moment are yours with the twist of a dial. You're in tune with the world, the amazing world of shortwave radio with a Hallicrafter's receiver.
The amazing world of shortwave radio. Now, if you'd like to receive one, we only have one, 45 RPM copy of that program, send us an email and tell us what you heard on that recording. Our email address is mnp@pcjmedia.com. That's mnp@pcjmedia.com. Anyway, we have to leave you right now. So on behalf of the continuing vacationing Paulette Macquarie and Dan Hensley, this is Keith Perron wishing you well, hoping that we'll see you all again very soon. 73s to you all and 88s to the ladies.